Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Anand Patel.
And I'm Naomi Sheldon.
And we're your hosts of the Pleasure Podcast. I'm a doctor specialising in sexual function.
And I'm an actor-writer with an interest in the intimate. We want to fill the gap in the nation's sex and relationship education through interviewing guests on how we relate to our bodies when it comes to sex, identity, and of course, pleasure.
Welcome to Season 4.
We're kicking off with a mini-series on parenthood. I'm pregnant with twins and finding mainstream narratives about pregnancy and motherhood pretty narrow. Where are the stories about trans people giving birth? What about the choice to be child-free? And what exactly does a doula do? I want to open up the stories we hear at these pivotal points in our lives.
As a GP, I have rather too short conversations with people at these defining moments. This was an opportunity to discuss the decision to get pregnant, to try again after the miscarriage, to challenge how the society you brought your child into would treat them and you, and have a deeper look at the way our health system handles pregnancy and motherhood as a whole.
This is by no means an exhaustive set of interviews, but we hope it's a bold start. Next week, we'll be returning to business as usual, but for now, it's the finale of the Pleasure Podcast mini-series on parenthood, and we are thrilled to welcome doctor and sexual function specialist Janine David to speak to us about sex and sexuality in pregnancy.
Janine is a GP working in Porthcawl, Wales, who specialises in men and women's sexual health. Janine is a regular speaker on the national and international stage and is actively involved in clinical research.
She's the only GP in Wales to be a Fellow of the European Committee of Sexual Medicine. That's the highest qualification you can achieve in this field. She's also a mother and believes that your identity as a sexual being shouldn't stop when motherhood begins.
We speak practically about the importance of masturbation, how to make sex more comfortable in the later stages, and how sadly semen isn't going to stimulate labour, but orgasms serve to keep you together.
It's a frank conversation about relishing the changes in pregnant bodies, maintaining intimacy, and retaining your sexual identity in this monumentally transitional and transformative stage of life. Do you find that when pregnant people come into your clinic that they have questions about their libido, about sex, early on in their pregnancy or further down the line?
I don't know that they will come in to see us about it. They probably go and see a midwife, but I don't know whether midwives actually talk about it. And I don't think women realise what happens to them with respect to libido and sex during pregnancy, because it's probably not really addressed. You're pregnant now, you know, Naomi, so maybe they do these days, but they certainly didn't at all when I was pregnant.
No, they don't.
No one mentioned it. And you just think, oh, and you don't really know what's happening to your body as it is, never mind your sex drive. And we know, well, initially your libido will probably start to go up, but then also you've got this hormone called HCG, which goes up and makes you feel absolutely horrific and sick and tired. And the last thing you'd probably want to do is have sex. But you've got that going on. And then at the same time, you've got all your estrogen going up, and that will increase your libido. And you think, well, which is going to take over? And you don't really know. And I think it's all unique, isn't it? It's an individual thing, hormones and pregnancy, and it affects probably every pregnancy is different. And there are lots of myths around it, aren't there? You know, with people thinking, ooh, should we be having sex? Is it going to damage the baby? This sort of thing. I think men really worry about that as well, and we don't realise, you know, about 80% of men will worry about having sex thinking their penis is going to hit the baby or their sperm is going to go into the baby or something crazy. But I think they do have these worries, and understandably, because they don't understand the anatomy. So perhaps it would be good if we could like reassure people with that as well.
And is there any risk of having sex while pregnant?
Well, if you've got a normal pregnancy, then there shouldn't really be any risk at all. And there are positions and stuff that you could perhaps do that would make you feel a bit more reassured. And we can talk perhaps a bit more about that if you like. And then towards the end of pregnancy, you know, everyone says, don't they, when you want to have a baby, make sure you drink raspberry leaf tea, have curries and have lots of sex, and then that'll bring on the baby. But that isn't actually true. And there's been lots of research done with this, and having sex doesn't bring on the baby.
Yes, I'm still being told that today, that having sex will encourage you to go into labour.
You will get uterine contractions when you orgasm, but that happens when you're not pregnant. But they're different from the contractions that happen when you deliver.
So that leads me on to asking this, actually, about masturbation and orgasm. Yeah, tell me more about what are the benefits or drawbacks whilst pregnant.
It's really important to try and maintain some sort of sexuality and sex with your partner during pregnancy, because orgasms are great for you. They'll relax you, they'll release oxytocin, which will help you bond with your partner. If you're more relaxed, the baby's going to be more relaxed and everyone's going to be happier. And maintaining that intimacy through pregnancy is important. And it's not, you know, it's not wholly about sex, and you don't just have to have an orgasm.
And we've talked a lot, I think, about a sort of outer course versus intercourse. And I think intercourse isn't generally an issue unless you've got, for example, a particularly low-lying placenta.
That's right.
Or something like that.
I mean, I think on the whole, we're thinking about relatively normal pregnancies. Unless you've got something wrong with your cervix, something, you know, you've got your placenta lying over the cervix, then, yeah, you wouldn't want to have intercourse. You wouldn't want to use sex toys.
So when you've had your scan, they will have an idea of where the placenta sits. And if the placenta sits too near the neck of the cervix, it won't come into contact with the penis exactly, but actually the thrusting of the penis is closer to the blood vessels. And what you don't want to do is obviously disrupt the placenta, which feeds the baby, or the blood vessels going to the baby. So if they're very low-lying, which is called placenta previa, often your midwife will tell you that, or in your scan report, it will say your placenta is low-lying, and therefore that's when you might need to consider being careful about penetrative sex and about using sex toys.
But I had understood that placenta is often low-lying at the beginning of pregnancy.
So the majority aren't low-lying, but they can be lower and then they move up in later pregnancy. So you might get told initially, oh, be wary of penetrative sex, and then later on they do the second scan at 20 weeks and go, oh, by the way, your placenta's moved nicely out the way, so you don't need to worry about that so much. So it is taken in stages.
Yes.
And the scans are really important because they're not just about saying, oh, here's a nice picture of your baby. They're also looking at, you know, abnormalities, unfortunately. And they're also checking on how many there are, you know, and that was an issue for you. You found there were two.
Certainly was.
And I think you'd be warned, wouldn't you, at this point that you shouldn't be having intercourse.
Yes.
And if you've had previous miscarriages, for example, they may explain to you that actually it's due to a weakness of the cervix.
Yeah.
And if you've got cervical incompetence, that means there is a weakness there, and they may put a stitch in to hold the cervix closed.
Cervical incompetence. I
know.
That language.
It's terrible. It's like, oh, you pathetic cervix, you. Yeah, it's dreadful.
But it's an amazingly sort of practical, sort of physical treatment, because if the neck of the womb is too weak to hold itself closed, well, you put a little stitch in to hold it closed. And then actually, as pregnancy progresses, then you can cut that stitch. So actually, the baby is then ready to come out.
Yes.
People worry in the first trimester that sex is going to cause a miscarriage, don't they, I think? You know, I think especially men. And that's a myth that I think we should dispel, really.
Yes.
Because that's not the case on a normal pregnancy.
But I think it's particularly important to say that when women are aroused, their cervix and womb lifts up out of the way of the vaginal canal.
Oh.
But if a woman is not aroused, it's more likely that her cervix is going to be within the vaginal canal, and therefore you're more likely to hit it, which might make sex more uncomfortable.
Yeah, especially at this point, you know, you get all the hormones that blood goes to the cervix and the vagina, and so the cervix can be more tender in pregnancy. So, you know, if you are bumping it with a penis or a dildo, whatever, if you are banging it, it can be much more painful sexually in pregnancy.
That's interesting what you're saying about blood rushing to the vagina. I noticed that my vulva changed quite a bit during pregnancy.
Yeah.
And so did my husband. He noticed, and I did, that it was a lot plumper and firmer. Everything was a lot firmer. And I was wondering what that's about, but it sounds like it's to do with the blood.
It'll be due to your estrogen levels will have increased. So you'll get an increase in blood flow to the vulva, and that will make, they love this word, engorgement, which is horrible, isn't it? Engorgement.
An engorged vulva.
I know. You have an engorged vulva now. So I think, so you get this engorgement. You probably get increased secretions on the whole as well. So you feel wetter. So in a way, sex can be better in pregnancy because you've got more blood flow to the vulva and the clitoris, so that could be more sensitive. So for some people that'll be great because they'll be reach orgasm quicker, but for others it'll be slightly more tender, painful, so you have to go slower.
It's interesting, this idea, isn't it, of not being frightened of having sex with your partner when you're pregnant because of, you know, causing miscarriage or bumping the baby or the cervix. But also, there is a lot of pressure, I think, on the couple generally when people are pregnant. It can be a time of anxiety, especially in those first 12 weeks, because you think, I am a higher risk of miscarriage at this point, and, you know, the sickness, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a myriad of reasons why relationships might be under strain in that, especially first trimester. And so I wonder if, I certainly found that masturbation was super important rather than sex with my partner. But also partly because of anxiety, which was relieved by masturbation, but also because about a sense of who I was as a woman, as a sexual being. I think that as your body starts to change in different ways, breasts growing, but becoming very, very sore, and you know, the nipples, and you don't necessarily want them touched actually at that point, even though you've got the tits that you've always wanted for the first time in your life.
Yeah, that is the great thing.
and then you know, your tummy growing. I found it very, very hard to marry those changes with the libido surge that I was getting. So actually masturbation was sort of the only way I felt like I could sort of self-soothe or be that sexual being again and comfort myself that I still was that sexual being. Whereas those physical changes felt discombobulating and for me and I think my partner a little bit, like, who are we now, how do we continue now that our bodies are changing and our identities are changing?
With your partner, would he sort of offer to do masturbation with you as well, you know, oral sex or whatever, and would that have been of help to you, sort of thing, or did you feel, no, I wanted to do this on my own? Or,
well, I felt, yeah, I it was something that I felt I had to do on my own, actually, about my own sense of self. I think it was like a journey about who I am to me that was really important.
I think masturbation is really important as an element of self-care.
Yeah.
It's you time in the best sense of it. And it's you enjoying your body in whatever way you want to enjoy it. And, you know, masturbating and enjoying pleasure and getting an orgasm at the end, which soothes you and relaxes you. And, you know, and it, obviously, if you're pregnant during the time of coronavirus, that's quite stressful as well. You know, you're not being able to necessarily see the number of doctors you would normally see. You're not getting necessarily face-to-face midwife care. So it just feels a lot more on your own and you're in your four walls. And that can make it even more stressful. I can fully understand why that self-soothing would be important and necessary, but there's one part of it, well, you're doing it on your own, but that can sometimes exclude the other partner.
Yeah. Did he feel excluded or was he okay?
I think it was really tricky at first, actually, about trying to negotiate this new relationship, and it was very emotional. It was really tough and emotional, and when we did try to start having sex again, I found it very difficult because I, again, couldn't marry who I was anymore with what I wanted. I think I was having a crisis of identity, actually. And like, what kind of sex did I want? How did I want to be touched? I felt a bit self-conscious about my belly, about my breasts, and it was hard for both of us because I didn't have the language yet to describe that experience to him and explain. So actually he just felt rejected rather than being able to say, look, I don't know how I want to be touched anymore because this is a new body.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I think you have to accept that it is new and it's never going to be the same again and then change how you are and change your relationships to adapt to it.
I think that's very stressful for some relationships, the early part of pregnancy and, well, the entirety of pregnancy, actually, in the first year after delivery can be a time where actually relationships break down. Not necessarily permanently, but actually they can break down for a period of time because, you know, there's the stress of bodies changing, there's an anxiety of pregnancy and what's going to come after. As you've said already, the identity of who are you? If you are a, you know, thinking in your head that you are this young, vibrant, exciting person, and pregnancy and motherhood or fatherhood doesn't quite fit with what your view of that is, because, you know, fatherhood is my dad. Or fatherhood is my mum, you know, it's middle age or it's whatever that means to you, then actually that can be quite challenging in itself. It's a loss of my youth, a loss of the vibrancy. And I can imagine it's incredibly challenging for all parties within it.
Yeah, like I had a close friend say to me, so I've been on a bit of a queer journey over the past, I don't know how many years, but she asked me when she found out that I was pregnant, so what's going to happen with that now then? Is that it then? Is that over now? And I felt very defensive. I felt like, no, is that really the perception that me as a sexual being, somebody who evolves, who changes, whose tastes are still to be explored, ends now with pregnancy? Is this it now? And I think that's a real fallacy, you know.
Because life goes on, doesn't it? And you have the child and, yeah, you may feel a bit rubbish and knackered for a little bit after, but then they grow up and you're still a person and a sexual person and yeah, this goes on. So I don't think you lose it.
Yeah,
it just changes. Yeah, and it's like a wave, isn't it? It changes at different times during the pregnancy and after the pregnancy.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
During pregnancy, how would you advise people to maintain intimacy with their partners if they're struggling?
Yeah, if they're struggling and intercourse isn't an option, I think it's still important to maintain the intimacy. You know, and I think the man can feel quite stressed during pregnancy. You know, they're nervous about doing it in the first bit, and then they're nervous towards the end because you've got this huge belly and they don't want to damage the baby, and they probably feel this, they need to look after you. And then if you're looking after someone, does that make you feel sexual towards them? I don't know. It changes, doesn't it? And so if you're not having the sex bit, which is fine, it's important to do intimacy things like being together, like sitting together, holding hands, massage, all this sort of thing. And there's plenty of ways to do that. I suppose for women to want sex, they need to feel desired as well, don't they? And, you know, your body changes so much. Maybe you lose a bit of the, you know, you're not so sexy anymore. I think it's changing, and, you know, you can get loads of sexy clothes now for pregnancy, can't you? You can get sexy-ish underwear and stuff during pregnancy and clothes. And so you can do it, but it's, you do change, don't you?
Yes. I think it does require a bit more thought, that's all. I think just being prepared that things will not necessarily be the same, but that's okay, and being ready for the evolution. You know, if you have been able to have conversations about what sort of sex you want, hopefully you can have conversations about the type of intimacy you want. Because as you say, as estrogen levels changes, your skin sensitivity changes.
Oh, really?
So people after the menopause often find that actually their skin sensitivity is changed significantly. And so the sexual script that you've been writing, most people recognise in a long-term relationship how to have a quickie. They get the idea of having sex in a certain way gets the person off in the shortest amount of time possible. And if you're doing that and then you have the menopause and actually your skin sensitivity changes, and the back of your arm or the back of your neck or the back of your buttocks being stroked, which was previously very exciting, is now actually really irritating or overly sensitive or doesn't feel like anything, it's quite difficult to tell your partner, you know, that thing that you used to do that really worked, it doesn't work at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
because it can come off as quite challenging for that person. Mm. Going, you know, am I a bad lover now? Is that the problem? Whereas actually, it's, you know, your body has changed, so just relearn that landscape. It's about a new the period of exploration, and that can be quite exciting if you sell it the right way.
After you've had the baby, your estrogen dips, and it's almost like you're having a mini menopause. Especially if you're breastfeeding, because you something called prolactin will increase, and you will get, it's almost like a mini menopause post-delivery, where wow. everything becomes a bit drier, and like Anand said, yeah, your skin changes. And so at that point, it's nature's way, isn't it, of saying, don't have another baby at the minute, because you need to focus on this one. So it kind of puts you into that sort of almost menopausal state for a bit, and then you may not feel like it, and yes, sex is going to feel different again. And of course, you've just had a baby, so you've had all the changes that happen after that, so it might smart a bit for a few weeks.
Do you think that there is a reason, a sort of biological evolutionary reason, why libido can go up during pregnancy, and especially in that second trimester?
Yeah, you've got to wonder, is it to try and keep the couple together? You think, yeah, as a, you know, you're going to have this baby, nature's going to want you to stay together, so yeah, make sure you keep that intimacy, keep having sex, or because you don't need it to have a baby anymore, do you? Because you've already got the baby. So I'm sure it must be something to do with keeping the couple together is why it does that. And then afterwards, I suppose it must be just because they don't want you to have another baby initially. Nature, not they.
The gods.
They. Who are these beings? Yes.
But also in men, I understand that testosterone levels dips during pregnancy.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So it can dip during pregnancy and the short period after pregnancy. The idea being that actually he will not be running off to try and impregnate someone else, and will be there to help support this very frail, weak baby. Yes. You know, this is a situation where actually the baby's at risk from predators, and then will need feeding, etc. So all the focus needs to be on the baby. There's a real primacy of baby, and that's often why when people have delivered, the mother becomes understandably very focused on the baby, because the cries of the baby are very much hardwired into the brain. It's very difficult to ignore a baby shriek, particularly if you're their mother, because it's basically organised so that actually this is a fire alarm going off in my head. I'm not going to sleep through this. And unfortunately, men can then feel that their partner's turning away from them. And that is actually true in some ways, because they're now getting their intimacy from somewhere else. Mm. They're getting their cuddles, they're getting their oxytocin and release from the baby.
And do male partners not get that oxytocin release?
Not to the same degree, I don't think. And I think, I mean, they do get some, you know, they do bond with their child, don't get me wrong. But the issue is, because they are used to getting that connection and intimacy from their partner, and their partner is now getting, because sometimes people have sex for lots of reasons, don't they? But one of the reasons they have sex is to feel closer to someone else. But actually, you can feel closer to someone else without having sex with them. Mm-hmm. And so actually, if you're a mum and have a baby and are cuddling that baby, you may get all of that cuddles and intimacy that actually went for sex for. Mm-hmm. So you stop wanting the sex anymore.
Yeah.
And that can be really challenging as well.
Would you suggest any particular positions that would be comfortable for people in their maybe second, third trimester who are finding it harder to move around? And also, you know, when you've got this big bump, there's nothing quite as alarming, I find, as if you're trying to be sexual and then you get a hell of a load of kicks. And you just realise, oh, there's four of us. Well, for me, because of I've got twins, but there's four of us in this
loads
bed.
Loads of you in there.
There's four in the bed.
I know. Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it, towards the end, because you're so big. And yeah, you can't lie flat on your back, because you'll squish a big blood vessel. So it's dangerous to lie flat on your back. You shouldn't really be doing that. So missionary is out. Probably your best bet towards the end is spooning and pillows. Really make use of pillows at this point. So you can either do on your side, you can tilt your pelvis up a bit with a pillow, so then you haven't got any weight then going on the side or the back. So that's a good one to be doing at this point. You could sit at the end of a table, and as long as you've got a fairly strong partner, well, they don't have to be that strong, and then, you know, you can have your legs spread, if you will, balanced at the end of the table or a chair or the bed, and then they can be opposite you. You know, you've got easy access, so to speak.
Yeah.
So you can look at doing that. In the second, it's not so bad when you're not so huge. Probably things like doggy style, that sort of thing, would be good then, because then you've got easy breast access. Your belly's not too big. Or woman on top, because then you can control how deep you go penetrative-wise. Yes. And I suppose, reverse cowgirl, isn't it? That's what they call it. Reverse cowgirl. You could do that perhaps towards the end, because then you haven't got a belly in someone's face. So you're facing the other way, and you can control how deep you go then.
But also the spinning thing allows you to also change depth of penetration. And so that can be more comfortable for some people. If you've got a very engorged vulva and actually it's more uncomfortable, then it just does allow you to change that. You can have sort of intracrural sex, which is where you put your thighs together. So actually it creates more of a spacer. So actually it's just the head of the penis then that's entering the vagina from behind.
What did you call that?
Intracrural. The crural area is the space between your thighs.
And then you can still use little, you know, bullet vibrators and stuff if you need to or want to as well, can't you? So that can help. I tell you what can help. So I had one of these. Have you had one of these? They're like these sort of crescent-shaped pillows that you have for when you're breastfeeding. Yes. But if you had it as an early present, you could use that as well for support and...
In front and to fit into,
yeah. They're quite good as... sex pillows, but don't tell the baby after that. No.
If this pillow could talk,
here's the sex pillow. No, it's the nursing pillow now.
If you are a couple that has previously been used to just the two of you, how do you manage a relationship and a sexual identity when there is actually now someone you need to care for?
Yeah, this is really difficult, isn't it? Because all your energy goes into this other person and you do not have the same for each other. And you think, where are you going to have time for sex amongst all this? Because you've got this all-encompassing creature that you're looking after at all times. So there is no gap. So I think you have to try and make a little bit of time. It's difficult. But even perhaps, you know, with the baby naps of an afternoon, and I think you have to change your sex life to think, we're not going to have long drawn out passionate nights, we are going to go for the quickies, because that is what you can do at that point. And this is where your sex life changes and you think, okay, we can't worry too much about it, we know what gets each other off hopefully, and we just have to fit in the odd quickie here and there where we can. An afternoon napping is good, and if you're quick then you can have a quickie and a nap, because you do need a little nap.
We've talked about vaginal deliveries a little bit and how that might affect people post-birth and their libido and their relationship with a partner. But what about if they have C-sections?
So I think the C-sections, it's a significant abdominal operation. And I think people forget that you are incising, so cutting through the lower abdominal muscles to get through an area just above the bladder. And you are then making a cut through the wall of the womb and taking the babies out of it and then sewing it all back closed again. Now, it's a relatively simple operation that doesn't take very long. And most times it's very successful without, you know, significant complications. But you are doing an operation that has cut through your lower tummy muscles. So it actually means you can't necessarily lift things very easily for a while. For up to 6 weeks, you're going to have difficulty perhaps lifting your baby sometimes. Because if you can imagine the muscles that you have to use to lift something from a cot or something, that will require you doing a little tummy crunch to do it. And in doing so, that might cause you some pain. And if you're in pain, sex is going to be less interesting for you usually. And also the nerves will grow back. And are they going to grow back at the same rate? Is it going to take a little while for it to stop being numb? Will it be a bit hypersensitive to start with? Will that settle down? You know, we don't know. And so everyone's sex life after the delivery is different. And I've got some patients who come in and they go, well, we've already had sex. And you're like, oh, okay. How was that? And they're like, well, it's fine. Or it was a bit sore. And sometimes the woman sits back and kind of goes, I don't want to, you know, you kind of see from their face, please don't encourage them to have sex with me at the moment. I do think that some relationships don't necessarily have the ability to talk about it to that extent. Go, actually, my body does not feel ready for this now. And, you know, permission and full consent hasn't really been sought for it. Mm. There's kind of the expectation that we'll just get back and have sex now, won't we? And you're like, well, actually, you may, if you've had a tear, if you've had this been sewn, if, you know, if you've had an operation, you know, if you just had a baby, you know, you have actually stretched your muscles and your pelvic floor, it will take time to come back together. And in most cases, it will do absolutely fine. And that's the thing to say.
When should you start taking contraception again?
Well, you have to, it's best not to have sex for the first 6 weeks anyway, because everything's still a bit sore and bleeding and, you know, depends on what you had. And if you're breastfeeding, then you are fairly safe with respect to contraception because that is protective.
Really? Because I thought that was an old wives' tale.
No, you have to be careful, but it's not bad contraception. Again, that's nature, isn't it? But yeah. You can start the progesterone-only pill then after 6 weeks.
So basically, if you're breastfeeding, it gives you approximately 90% coverage for the first 6 months. That would mean that 10 in 100 women using that method of contraception would get pregnant in a year. Mm. Whereas if you, which is still reasonably high for some people, so I wouldn't recommend it's the only thing you're doing.
I don't want to miss them.
No, exactly. So that's why we generally, at the 6 week check, where we would meet up with you and your baby, we would discuss through, you know, one, how your mood is and how your physical state is, but also what your plans for sex and contraception. Mm. And one of those conversations would be, right, well, if you're breastfeeding, you can only have certain types of contraception. If you're not breastfeeding, you've got more options, because you don't want to be giving necessarily women's hormones through the breast milk.
Right.
So yes. it's just trying to make sure that you're giving the most appropriate type of hormone to the stage, really.
Yes.
But at this point, you may still not feel like it.
Do people feel a lot of pressure to start having sex again? Do you get people asking about that a lot?
Yeah, men. Men ask about it.
Do they?
Yeah, because I think they think, come on now, we ought to be doing it. But I think men have got to be patient with this, and it's got to be woman-led, really, because, you know, your body has been through an awful lot, and you don't get your pre-baby body back straight away. That was a myth that I didn't realise, even though I'm a doctor, I should have. But I remember having a baby and then thinking, oh God, I thought it would just go completely back to normal, but it doesn't. It takes ages to go back to normal, and you can't be too harsh on yourself. It is what it is, you know, it's going to take time, and you may not feel like it for some time. Yeah, there is pressure to get back, you know, and celebrities put you under pressure, don't they? Because you see all these pictures of women who've had babies, and next thing they're in the gym 2 weeks later with a flat stomach, and that puts pressure on people, but that's not real. I think perhaps you have to be open with your partner as well, because maybe you don't feel quite as sexy as you used to. You need the man to look at you that way again. So you need to perhaps make sure this communication is good between the two of you about all these issues after, to re-establish your sexuality.
I wish there was a way of finding the changing body from the first few weeks of pregnancy right up until the end and beyond. Sexy and desirable, to welcome in and accept and adore the changing statue, so to speak, of that form, rather than always having this very harsh measuring stick of that pre-baby body or of the images that we're sold, which are sexy. Like, there was nothing sexier than when my husband was kissing my belly and my thighs, and me realizing it wasn't about the babies at that point. It was just about me as a strong kind of pregnant sexual being at that point. And it was such a relief to know that, oh, actually, it can coexist. I keep thinking about this kind of the Madonna whore trope, and how you can never encompass the two, and that maybe that there could be a way, if there could be a way of encompassing them both, we would feel so much better about not only our bodies, but about childbirth, about motherhood as a whole.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should embrace it, though, and think, okay, we're curvier now. It makes for a change. I think we have to empower ourselves and embrace it.
I think there's lots of stories being told that are about, you need to get your pre-pregnancy body, or you need to, you know, get your revenge body, or, you know, that your body has to in some way win. And you're thinking, actually, if we tell the stories that each of these people are warriors at all stages, that each of them are valid and beautiful and extraordinary. And part of the thing I get really excited about is about recognizing the body changes that have to happen for you to get pregnant and be pregnant and deliver. And these are so phenomenal and they are so extraordinary that them on their own should be enough to just value the person that has gone through this. And that person should be considered sexy and extraordinary as a result of that.
Hmm. Women during pregnancy should feel empowered and think, it's amazing what's happening to my body. You know, look at yourself in the mirror and look at the changes and embrace them rather than think of them negatively. Have positive attitudes. Right? Look, you know, there's pros and cons to all these bits, but, you know, when your belly is so stretched, the skin is so smooth, it's amazing. There's loads of amazing bits. And yeah, just embrace the curves and think, this is novel. It's me, it's my body. And because I've done an amazing thing.
Thank you for listening to the Pleasure Podcast.
If you enjoy this, do share, review and subscribe on iTunes.
It really does help other people find us and helps to give the series a boost. Please do give us 5 stars.
Thank you to Acast for hosting us,
Matt Peaver for editing us, Ollie Birch for the music,
Gilad Visotsky for the graphics.
Join us next time when we interview another guest for their insights on the relationship we have to our bodies, sex, and of course, pleasure.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.